This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 7th of September, 2022. Markets testing those key support levels we've talked about for a bit now, the 3,900 and a little bit area in the S&P 500. We dipped below there just after an ISM services figure yesterday. So continuing this crazy divergence with the S&P Global Alternative Survey, which actually was revised slightly lower to sub 44. We have the ISM services out at 56.9, actually slightly strengthening, showing a more robust expansion relative to July. Very solid other bits and pieces there with the new orders at 61.8. The employment edging slightly higher to above 50, just barely, and 71.5 on the prices paid. That number pretty elevated still, even though it's slightly lower. Anything above, 50 is higher. So 71 is a lot higher, and certainly not showing the softness we saw in the ISM manufacturing. But of course, this is good data, and it's an important survey, pumps up U.S. Treasury yields, and that seemed to be what spooked risk sentiment, although we kind of chopped back and forth, and it was only sort of later after the close and overnight where I think maybe yen volatility is getting on people's nerves. I'll talk about that in a little bit here, that saw us testing a little bit lower in the Asian session, but pretty testy levels here, Peter. I don't know what you're drawing out of the market action for information value.
No, it was that better than expected ISM, as you said, and it, I've shown it as well. Maybe we could show that on slide three. I know this is a 1 month change, but there was also a change yesterday. So to the left, you see the Fed funds forward curve, and you can see that the blue line, which is that's actually set for this 2nd of September. Never mind. The trajectory is still the same. So we have this Fed funds market that is pushing, the forward curve is pushing lower. So in other words, the market is pricing in higher higher policy rates than just a month ago. And also that they won't cut as much when we get to the low point for the cycle. And so equities were spooked. It's still interest rate sensitive. And I think the interesting dynamic, and correct me if I'm wrong here, John, I think what's fascinating here is that you have this super strong dollar. You have the numbers in the US that are relative to the rest of the entire world, extremely strong. And you have the Fed, which is hiking the policy rates relatively fast to everyone else, which is bolstering this dollar, which then worsened financial conditions a lot in the emerging markets, etc. So a lot of countries around the world are in a predicament, because if you see some of the PMI surveys from other countries in the emerging markets, for instance, they're getting extremely weak, and they probably want to stop loosening. But when the Fed is just hammering on, when you have a dollar reserve system, they're actually forced to follow through. Otherwise, their currencies will decline even more, and they probably import more inflation and more financial troubles. I just find that as a very interesting dynamic that is taking place. I also want to highlight as well that the past 2 weeks price action have seen the VIX forward curve collapse, so it's now flat. So it's not sending stress signals yet. It's still very calm. And I just want to remind that in all of this drawdown, we have never had that really big moment where the market is just capitulating. We haven't had that yet. And that's why I still feel pretty comfortable that we'll take a big leg lower here in equities eventually. What will be the ultimate trigger? I don't know. Let's see. There's a CPI report on Monday that it definitely can add a little bit to the negative sentiment if it's too hot.
Yeah, I think something has changed structurally in the volatility market. I've seen discussions that there's a strategy more of doing put spreads rather than outright puts for volatility. So we just have not seen the kind of volatility response in some of these sell-offs that we saw in the past, especially when we were in those markets where the market was extremely touchy around declines, because people were using short volatility on the downside to sort of support their returns or enhance their returns. It's just a very structurally different market. So yeah, I think we need to sort through that in the coming weeks and months to figure out where the breaking points are for that model. I briefly mentioned yen, and I think this is a key factor here. So we have, of course, as central banks are normalizing policy, yields have come up higher, and then they were solidly higher yesterday in the U.S. as mentioned. So well above the 3.25% and 3.33% was trading this morning. That's above all but two of the daily closes we saw when the 10-year, for example, ran to 3.5%, and that June spike, which was very brief. And this has been more of a grinding move. So I'm very interested here with the yield picture and how that continues to drive the Japanese yen lower. And just a very impressive move over the last couple of days here. You can see it again on slide four. We were trading above 144 overnight. The Ministry of Finance out with some of its sternest wording yet on how it is, quote unquote, watching with great interest. Well, they can watch all they want to, but they're going to have to throw a many billions of dollars of intervention into this thing to slow the pace and probably just create volatility. And really, what we need is the Bank of Japan to abandon this policy if we're going to see yen finding support here. Japan also, let's remember, is vulnerable on the whole energy import side of things. So this is the beatings will continue until the Bank of Japan does something, I think, unless we have some profound pivot and the Fed is fully back into easing and doing QE again. That doesn't seem to be just around the corner. Next, a chart point for dollar yen, by the way, around 147.65. That was the high in 1998. And we see the dollar strength also broadening out yesterday. Euro dollar really briefly touching new lows. We have an ECB meeting up tomorrow. I'll preview more of that a little bit later. But let me just jump. I don't want to spend too much time on FX just yet, but let me jump to you, Ola. Is there anything that's crossing your radar here with the power and gas situation? I know Norway is talking about discussing the that it could join, and I actually have some thoughts on that it could join or is sort of willing to allow the whole price cap discussion with Europe. I thought that was a very interesting signal from the Norwegian krone side of things. But what's your focus on commodities here?
Well, the focus right now is just one of the market becoming very defensive, because obviously all the developers that you gentlemen just highlighted is really adding some strain to the sector for now. So I just put in the month to date performance here in slide six. We're obviously only a week in, but we're seeing negative price action across all sectors, led by energy and industrial metals. And obviously, when we have the dollar surging as it is, and with that the impact on heavy commodity consuming nations, especially in emerging markets, we got the rising yields, and we got COVID restrictions now, or mobility restrictions now in place in 41 cities. Another major city was has been put under lockdown since yesterday. So all of this just adding up to a sector which, for now at least, is being challenged due to worries about the demand outlook. And it's also highlighted in the in China, where which has really been the epicenter of the slowdown with their restrictive policies regard to combating COVID. The year to date imports, as you can see on slide 6 here as well, you can see how we basically got negative growth in imports across most of these key commodities. Exceptions being something like coal, which obviously is in hot demand. Coal prices hitting record highs in Asia, and it just basically shows that we're going to have another year of record coal consumption across the world.
All right. And just rewinding a bit, talking about that Norway story, the Prime Minister saying they're willing to discuss it, but they need to, of course, any discussions have to look at making sure that nothing ends up limiting output of natural gas and oil. But in principle, the Norway is in favor of this if it's something that can be agreed, especially with the Equinor and the likes, the major producers in Norway. But just curious how this affects the Norwegian krona. On slide five here, looking at the Norwegian krona versus the Swedish krona rate, and we recently pushed back above or around 110, a pretty key line in the sand there on the chart, as you can see, stretching back a few years. And I wonder if this story could be something that helps to encourage the pair back lower, capping some of the anticipation of the boon to the Norwegian krona from these incredible profits. And in the right, Aussie Kiwi, I've brought this up before, whether it's set to finally break above this almost 10-year range, sort of capped most of the time by 112.50 or so, which we recently touched on the maybe a little bit the RBNZ being ahead of the curve and finishing before the RBA in terms of its tightening regime, but as well, just the very dramatic current account differential there, as Australia has seen record current account surpluses, whereas New Zealand is suffering its worst current account deficits in a generation on its energy import bills. So I'm just curious to watch that pair if it can break free into new territory here as a interesting side story to all the focus on the Japanese yen and the US dollar. And then the hardest currency of all, gold, just continues to go from just continues to suffer. And all I guess the usual suspects here are these rising yields and the big strong dollar.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's the gold performance in different currencies just says it all. We're up 15% if you were holding gold against the yen. You're down 7% if you're holding against the dollar. Again, if your alternative investment was stocks and bonds, then you would still be better off even if you were in dollars with gold down 7% with some of the losses that we've seen in stocks and bonds. But that aside, the sector is still the best performing so far this week from the slide I showed earlier. And there is obviously a lot of geopolitical worries as well. Impacting the market. If we're seeing a renewed risk off in the stock market, that may also just attract some demand. But whether that is strong enough to prevent the market from having another go at this key level of support around that 1680 level, that obviously remains. But obviously, very very clear level that needs to be on the radar of traders. If we do challenge it, then it's mostly the response to a challenge that will be that will set the direction. If we do find support once again, that obviously is a strong sign. If we fall through, then we could see this market drop quite a bit further.
Okay. Peter, we have earnings, not many earnings up. You discussed NIO a little bit yesterday. I think it's more interesting maybe to discuss what you mentioned in our little conversation before we started the podcast with this latest statement from Xi Jinping about the need to innovate. I think this was in response, I don't know if it's specifically or sort of between the lines, in response to the NVIDIA limitation on assessed on NVIDIA for exporting those AI chips. Just this whole sort of pulling apart narrative. I thought you phrased it quite well this morning.
Yeah, it's I think just Xi Jinping is acknowledging it more verbally now. And I think it's a strong signal when he does it in an official speech where he talks about this invoking the whole nation system, which is a mechanism in the Chinese law where the government can centralize and steer resources towards a key strategic objective. So they did it in the biotech during the pandemic to find a vaccine. They have done it on the on space in their rivalry with the US. And now they're doing it on semiconductors and other. He broadens it out, actually. He says all the key strategic technologies for China, and I just think to me it bolsters my view. I'm updating my view on this that we are going towards a bipolar world. You cannot have these global supply chains when you are at odds with each other. So we'll see more. And it is inflationary, and it's very important for people to understand that it's structurally inflationary when you want to pull production back closer to the US and Europe, where price levels are just higher. So that's really a key thing to understand. And then I'm glad Ole brought it up. I mean, these acceleration in COVID restrictions, not that I want to pat myself on the shoulder too much here, but I think we have mentioned it a couple of times on this podcast, also in our client presentations. I mean, it's a key risk. Everyone is celebrating right now that container freight rates and other things on logistics are coming down. There is an easing of in the global supply chain, but from what we know, the vaccines are not very effective in China, and they're certainly not buying the vaccines in Europe and the US. That would not be a good sign for China to do. So I think we'll have to risk more lockdowns. I mean, we're moving into the winter period, so it's something to consider. And then just quickly on NIO, coming back to those lockdowns. So we know NIO had a bad Q2. We know that they're probably going to confirm that the Q3, which we're still in right now, will look okay. And then the key question is whether they dare to say anything about Q4, because with Chengdu and these other, Uli mentioned 40, 41 cities with more or less restrictions, of course, that's going to impact consumer sentiment and NIO. And if you look at the Chinese import numbers that came in overnight, you can just see that the Chinese economy is slowing down. I mean, it's not a strong backdrop for car sales, if you ask me.
Okay, let's watch out for that. And as you mentioned, as we've also mentioned before, a company like Tesla, which has staked a lot of its results on its expansion in China, very interesting. The awkwardness of trying to bridge the two poles of a bipolar economy in the future, a very dicey prospect. Lots on the calendar today. I'll head through it. We'll look through it on slide 9. We have the Bank of England Governor Bailey and others testifying before Parliament. This is quite interesting timing-wise, of course, just after Prime Minister Truss took power yesterday. That relief rally in sterling not really lasting very well, as you can see with We touched 116 in cable yesterday. We're trading sub 115 at times this morning, but we've seen a little bit of a bounce there. Euro sterling has also turned around to a degree, found support at within the range. And there's quite an interesting range level there. So have a look at your euro sterling charts. I think that's really showing you where the UK is divergently suffering. If euro sterling is also breaking that sort of post-Brexit range from early 2021. We also have a U.S. July trade balance, and with less sort of goods focus and goods intensity and those inventories that built up after the huge bulge and surge of physical buying during the pandemic, it's been ripping in the direction of smaller deficits. So that's a very interesting development there. And we have a Canadian similar data point there. And then the Bank of Canada decision with a 75 basis point rise to 3.25% expected. A nice solid interest rate there, front running the Fed just a little bit here. Interesting to see the guidance with the oil having come down, maybe some of the inflationary pressure seen coming down. And we saw the July IV PMI, the prominent Canadian PMI, actually fell quite sharply in July to just barely sub 50. So interesting, that one's coming out around the same time. A couple of Fed voters up speaking later. Fed Beige Book also, sometimes it makes for interesting reading some of the anecdotal stuff from the various regions. So reading for people that are interested in actually spending some time and hearing what the Fed is hearing. And then we have an important speech by RBA Governor Lowe overnight as the market is starting to price a downshift in expectations from the RBA. And maybe interesting to hear if there's any currency angle to what he says with Aussie dollar plumbing towards those cycle lows near 60, sub 67 levels, what we saw this morning. And then tomorrow, the ECB meeting, 75 basis points is expected. It is the favorite scenario. I think they need to go 100 basis points to impress. I'm not sure they will. But a very key meeting for the ECB also in terms of establishing that they want to remain credible on the interest rate front. Okay, that's a wrap for today. Stay careful out there. We're at pretty interesting white knuckle levels in some of these key U.S. indices. Let's see how this plays out. And we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.